Job Podcast on 95.7 The Game. Shomori Block.
You were clown then, and you're clown now.
Alan Stiles.
By 10 more inches, I'd be in the pros too.
And Adam Close.
What's he famous for? Wearing a thong?
Brought to you by the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network.
You are listening to the Dream Job Podcast. I'm Shomori Block.
I'm Alan Stiles.
And I'm Adam Close. What's going on, guys?
All right, so how we doing today, fellas? Another show, another week.
Another week. Feels like sports are getting closer and then getting further and then getting closer again.
It somehow looks worse than it did last week.
Baseball.
The whole Cowboys roster has COVID. Unnamed baseball players have COVID. I don't know. Good thing NBA pushed that deadline way better. Planned on starting it so far out and not just getting back into it, you know?
And especially, oh, baseball, will you ever get it together? Right. So welcome. We're glad you joined us. We have a good show lineup for you today. Today we're going to talk a little bit about sports without fans. We're going to talk a little NBA. We're also going to dive into that age-old discussion of steroid guys in the Hall of Fame. So let's get started. With all the sports set to return, sort of, for the most part, it looks like we might have sports, hopefully. Still unclear, but everybody's talking. Without fans. And we have recent examples. So the PGA did their first tournament last weekend with no fans. It's the PGA. I didn't really pay attention. NASCAR has done their events. UFC, as we've discussed in the past, done their events. So here's a question I'm going to pose to you fellas, okay? Of the three major sports that people actually watch, MLB, NFL, and NBA, which one is going to be like the weirdest or the suffer? Which product is going to suffer the most from the experience watching it without fans in the stands? Alan.
Yeah, so my thought is it's got to be the NFL because those stadiums are huge. I mean, they're huge, and just watching them empty, it's going to look like a practice. You know, I just think that would be my answer on that one, simply because when you're watching a football game, you see the crowd. I think they mic up the players because you can hear, you know, the famous Peyton Manning audibles and things like that. But you know, like the feeling of a football game, I think, I don't want to say more so than baseball and basketball, but it's just so big. It's just going to look weird. I would say that from a competitive standpoint, though, I think it's going to affect basketball the most, the NBA, simply because I think a lot rides on the emotions of being at home, not necessarily being at home, but having that fan base, because not only does it affect you as a home team and you want to do well, if you talk to a bunch of players when it comes to the star players, they love being on the road. They all say that, and they love silencing the crowd. So not having any of that, and if a referee tries to tell us that they aren't swayed at all by fans, I don't think we could trust them because there's no way it's 0%. So I think from a product standpoint, it's going to affect the NFL, but from like a competitive standpoint, I think it could affect the NBA the most.
That's interesting, Alan. So I was watching the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa thing, and I had no context because it was 97. I was a big A's fan, but I didn't realize the whole free agency and him practically being a rental in St. Louis. But when he was talking about the fans giving him standing ovations when he's in the middle of a slump in St. Louis,
yeah.
It's like, and that was the turning point for him. Like, bam, he smashes a home run. He signs a 4-year deal. The rest is history. I had never given that sort of credence to the fans' influence, especially if you really want to call a spade, how poorly he was treating it in Oakland while he was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So given the fans they're just due with that, I think that all of the sports are going to suffer in terms of the players feeding off of the fans, right? But we're not going to be at the games. We weren't going to be at the games anyways, because we're only going to be at a couple games a year because of logistics. So the NFL is a superior product on TV already. Watching an NFL game on TV is much better than watching it in person. Right. In terms of viewing a football game. So the NFL is going to be fine. I kind of put baseball in that same category because the Marlins and all these teams play in front of no fans anyways, the A's during the week. Right. So we play in front of fans already. So it's not going to be completely novel. And now this part of this is my fandom. I think the NBA, I'm not answering who's going to suffer the most. I think the NBA has the most to gain simply because, man, 5-on-5, man, the microphones, the cameras in your face, the coaches, the referees, there's only like 15 people out there and everyone's, even if they're not mic'd up, the microphones are going to be able to pick up everything they say, everything the coaches say, everything the refs say back to the players. I think there's really an avenue for the NBA to give us more of what we already want there. More of what we've already shown. We love that. More coverage, more access, more inside, more behind the curtain. Let's get it all. Let's put a million cameras in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Let's record them when they're not playing basketball. Let's see what their families are up to. Let's see what the people working the facilities have to say about the players staying in the facilities while they're there. Let's make a whole 30 for 30, a 20-part series about this whole thing. Let's get it all. Let's ring it out for every last drop. So I think the NBA is really poised to capitalize there.
That's funny because I kind of feel – so the NFL home field advantage tactically is going to suffer the most. If you think about the Seahawks, you think about the Chiefs, you think about places like that, right? So tactically, I feel like the NFL teams are going to lose their true home field advantage of the crowd noise, right? When I think about baseball, I think baseball benefits if you can hear the crack of the bat better, if you can hear the ball hitting the catcher's mitt and things like that. I think that will actually enhance the experience. Football, again, I agree with Alan, it is going to be weird. 80,000, 60,000 seat stadium empty with no one in it. But if you've ever went to a game, if you sat close enough to hear those collisions that take place on the field, it is magical. And being able to hear those without people yelling, that would also be, it's not going to make up for nobody in the stands, but that's something to listen to. When I think about basketball, and when you're watching a basketball game, the crowd is everything. You can even like kind of look away, and when you hear ha, then you know to look at the screen. When you take the crowd out, and I think about the ambient noise of a basketball game, then you have sneakers on a hardwood floor squeaking, and that's just going to be annoying. Like, I feel like basketball is going to be the weirdest thing to watch without fans in the stadium or arena.
The pressure is really going to be on the play-by-play and color guys to do a good job. You know, that dead air is going to be even more amplified.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, kick, 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 for like 60 minutes. Can you imagine that? This is going to be awful.
Right. Well, it's funny that you say that because they are the one sport that plays music during the game. So they're probably going to crank it up louder than they typically do just to kind of cover some of that up. But even going back to, you know, how it will affect the play, especially being Warriors fans, how many times in Oracle, now with how good the Warriors were, we understand they were amazing, but how many times in Oracle did the Warriors get up maybe 5 points, the crowd starts roaring, Steph and Clay get that look in their eye, and one of them just hucks a 50-footer for no apparent reason. It doesn't go in. There's, you know, one or two plays here. Now it's a close game. You could make the argument that for teams like that, that ride that wave, I mean, I hate to bring up that 3-1 year, but maybe in some of those situations, they make a different play. You know, they decide to run the offense again instead of putting that team in the coffin and hearing the crowd roar. Conversely, LeBron, you know, isn't able to get juiced up off looking around and seeing all those Warrior fans starting to cry as the seconds tick down, knowing that they're going to pull this off. So
it happened one time.
I know. And look, it still pains me, but that's all I think about when I think of it. Just has really been branded on me to think of that whenever I hear the words home court advantage. I can't not think about it. I can't.
Like I was saying in the last episode, it'll be fascinating to see, man. Cause there's going to be some advantage somewhere had by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are listening to the Dream Job Podcast. My name is Adam Close. We're going to be moving this right along. I grew up in the South Bay. I was a big A's fan. My dad's from Utah. He was a big A's fan. So I grew up with the green and gold in my crib, all that stuff. We were always at the Coliseum. Mark McGwire is my favorite player by a long shot. I got Mark McGwire stuff all over my room here. I wanted to be just like him. He was my idol. Like, it's safe to say he was my idol. And there's a lot of maybe psychological trauma that's associated with your idol being a known cheater. That's for a different podcast. I was engrossed in the documentary. I learned a bunch of stuff I didn't know before. I think I might have fallen back in love with Sammy Sosa and then did a quick Google search and then fell back out of love with him.
That's fair.
Somebody needs to get that guy. But we're
just going to get into it, because obviously all those guys are great. Sammy Sosa's an MVP. Mark McGwire got a gold glove. Barry Bonds, we don't need to talk about Barry Bonds' resume. Are they in the Hall of Fame? My answer is a resounding yes, because it's the Hall of Fame. They did it. They were doing it against the competition that was presented to them. That's where I stand. I'm not going to lose any sleep if a guy who did steroids is in the Hall of Fame, because there's already a couple in there and I've been sleeping just fine. What are your guys' thoughts?
I mean, so here's the deal. I don't think that most of those guys should be in, because for one, a lot of those guys were only home run hitters. They weren't elite defenders. They weren't elite in even hitters, for that matter. Some of these guys were home run hitters and like 250 average hitter type guys for their career, right? The two exceptions for me, first things first, of course, Barry Lamar Bonds, the GOAT, well, second GOAT after Willie Mays. He was a Hall of Famer before he allegedly took steroids, and I say allegedly because it's never exactly been proven, even though there's a crap ton of circumstantial evidence. I get it. But before that, he was a Hall of Famer. And furthermore, if you ask me, if I wanted the Barry Bonds I want on my team is the 40-ish home run guy who played gold glove defense, who hit for average and power and stole bases. The dude that hit 73 home runs was roaming left field like God, you know, it was a pain to see him out there playing defense and stole no bases. He wasn't a complete player. I like the old Bonds better. That Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And then Roger Clemens, again, there's less of a exact timeline on when he started taking steroids, but I believe all the evidence points it was for that late career surge. And again, before that time, Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers ever. Mark McGwire, for instance, I know that's your guy. But Mark McGwire, I don't really know, had he not taken steroids, what his career would have been as far as being a complete player, because he was really juiced up, muscled out, home run smacker. And strangely enough, he in his early career, if you look at Mark McGwire, he was like this lean, lanky dude, and he was still hitting home runs in. So who knows what his career would have been, but he was strictly a home run hitter. Sammy Sosa, the same thing. I wouldn't necessarily put everyone in, but those two guys in particular belong.
So I think that's a good take, Shamari. And yeah, for my take on this, I'm basically excluding Barry Bonds, because like you said, he could be in the Hall of Fame or deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for what he did before everything with the steroids. There's a lot of people think he might have been better than Ken Griffey, you know, in his prime, which is a discussion for another day, because everybody loves the kid. But what I'm going to take this to is that I think this needs to be broken down into eras. The Hall of Fame just needs to be broken down into eras straight up, because we know that they cheated, as in they used PEDs. I think there is another form of cheating out there. I'm one of those people that does not believe that Babe Ruth was the best player of all time. I don't even know if he's close. You want to know why? Because Babe Ruth only played against people that look like him. Okay. He only played against white players. He had retired before Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. So Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, all those players, they sit in the Hall of Fame with no asterisk, nothing like that. Even though they didn't face, there was a whole Negro league with Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, all these guys they never had to face, but they get to sit in the Hall of Fame. Now, sure, the Negro Leagues is represented in the Hall of Fame, but they get to sit in the Hall of Fame based on who they faced. People like to joke about, you know, the Gen Zers and some millennials like to joke about Michael Jordan's competition. They say he played plumbers and things like that. What are we doing with the competition back then? You didn't even face anyone that didn't look like you, but they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I think it should be a segregation era, come up with a more PC name for that, you know, a juice era, come up with another PC name for that, and get all these guys in, because think about it. They just ran, ESPN just ran that special on Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire this past weekend. Major League Baseball is still making money from that era, and they're not going to give the money back. And we don't even have to get into the whole cheating thing as it pertains to the Astros. I know that's a little stickier because they won versus Hall of Fame is voting, but this whole thing is just, until you address those things, you did not play any other race. If that doesn't have an asterisk, I don't think anything should right now.
Well, and to that point, pitchers were juicing. So it's kind of the opposite side of that coin, Alan. Mm-hmm. Instead of having, you're only playing against some competition, not all the best competition. The steroid era guys are playing against the best guys in the world, and they're on steroids.
Right.
And so, Shamari, to your point, Sammy Sosa stole 30 bases that year. That's pretty all around. He was an okay right fielder. Mark McGwire has a gold glove on his resume. It wasn't like he was a shill out there. He had 49 home runs at 215 pounds. That's me. He was out there looking like
I don't know, man. First base gold glove. Runs. First base gold glove is like
Come on.
Yeah, come on. It's all right. Well, all right, got it, guys.
If you say that, then I don't ever want to hear you defend Brandon Belt, because that's his calling card.
JT Snow was also a defensive first baseman. I love Brandon Belt, though.
He's
still underrated. No, Brandon Belt's hitting is underrated. He doesn't hit home runs, but he has a great eye.
He doesn't hit home runs or doubles or triples or singles.
Well, but that's because he's on the Giants and he has...
All right, we're getting off point. That's my bad. Okay. Adam, get back to what you were talking about.
That's obviously my boy. Mark McGwire is obviously my guy. So I just take... He played first base. He got a gold glove at first base. He was the best defensive first baseman in the league.
He was the best guy that caught the ball from the shortstop. That is impressive. He probably didn't drop any, and I commend him for that. And his gold glove is well deserved.
I appreciate you saying that. I could hear it.
I don't know if that was a real compliment, but I think that's all you're gonna get.
He didn't have four like Barry. My bad. Yeah, man, I really want to see him in. Because like I said, it's all a fame, you know? I don't know how you measure fame. Mark McGwire didn't have Instagram followers back then. But he had a lot of Got Milk ads and a lot of McDonald's ads. And he was on
those Carl's shows. Jr. commercials.
Carl's Jr., all all of that. So it's like, he did it. If there's a threshold of fame, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa did it. I could make the point that the other guys on the steroid list didn't reach that Hall of Fame threshold.
Right.
The Rafael Palmeiros, you know, the Craig Biggios, although they say he's like not really on the list, even though he obviously was a juice box.
Right. Yeah. Because like, what are we going to do with Alex Rodriguez?
Oh, man. He keeps making those TikToks, man. He's going to be a second ballot.
Again, the position he played and the production he had, when he went to the Yankees, they moved him over to what? They moved him to second, right? But he was
third.
They moved him to third. But he was a shortstop in his prime with power. That is so rare. That is so, so rare. And again, that was an all-around player that my thing with Alex Rodriguez is that he got caught after everyone else got caught, when it was like, come on, guys, we can't do this. And he's like, all right. And then he's like, turn around, like inject himself with the needle. So when you talk about Bonds, Sosa, McGwire, all those guys, when they did it, it was everyone knew what was going on and everybody was like, all right, it's all good.
Right.
Alex Rodriguez, the reason why I would exclude him, and again, I do think that he is a Hall of Fame talent, is because he did most of his dirt well after everyone else had already stopped or was out of the game already.
Yeah.
That's a good point. He might have a little bit of the Barry thing where you can make the case he's a Hall of Famer before he even gets to New York.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Adam. I think it's basically the same case, you know?
But and to that point, like, they cashed their paychecks. People paid real money to go watch him play. Those World Series that were won in those years count. So I just don't get what the big hangup is. Why is our moral compass so fouled off by people doing steroids, but then we're so blind to these other things that actually matter in terms of like who we are as society?
I'll never forget Congress was investigating the steroid scandal. Congress. And so, don't you guys have laws to pass?
Right. You have really? Anything better to do?
Policing Major League Baseball?
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
So once again, you are listening to the Dream Job Podcast. I am Alan Stiles with Adam Close and Shamari Block. So we talked a little bit about all the main sports earlier, guys. I want to get back to the NBA and the current divide that's going on. The last week or the week before, we spoke about NBA. Sounds like it's back. It's all good. And it is still kind of all good, but Kyrie Irving is speaking on behalf of a couple players saying that it might not be all good. Some of them don't feel safe as far as being in a bubble. Others feel that with everything that's gone on with the protests and things like that, this might not be the best time for them to leave. And it could stop them from helping change come in the movement. So I want to ask you, how do you feel about the current divide? Do you think they should play? Let's just get into it. Adam.
Okay, can I just ask for clarification? Is part of that last part of we don't think we should go play because of the climate back in our home communities?
Essentially,
that,
yeah.
Oh, is, I know, but is part of that also we don't think we should go put more money in the white man's pocket, in the rich white owners?
It's both. It's hey, no, we're not necessarily right. going to be out in the streets protesting every day. Right. But at the same time, as far as an optic standpoint, does it really look good to put a bunch of black guys in a city for a majority white population's entertainment?
Right. Okay. So now tell me if I'm wrong. Is that what it is? Like, is the NBA black guys playing basketball for white people's entertainment?
I personally,
because I played a little basketball in my day, and all of my black friends really enjoy the NBA.
Yeah, no, I think it's just like the idea. It might be more about the owners versus. I think the owners, the masses, the climate which we are in right now. Why should a bunch of talented black guys and a few white guys go to a secluded place to basically take everyone's mind off of what's going on?
Yeah, because he kind of feels that it will be a distraction. Like, part of the reason the movement has been so strong of late is because everyone's stuck at home with nothing to watch. So his stance is essentially that if we go out there and we give people something to watch, the attention's going to be taken away from the progress and the movement that's going on right now.
And do you agree with that, Shamari?
Oh, see, this is tricky. I understand what he's saying, and I agree to an extent. So Charles Barkley and a bunch of other people said, oh, you can take the money and you can do this and this and that with it and put the money and the money. I do think that it would be a great statement to make. However, I also feel that the issue with it is that right now, you have two camps that are like, no, let's play and let's not play. And the number one thing I think is important is that all of these successful, wealthy young men who are in the prime of their lives, whatever they do, they need to do it together. And whether that's play or not, everybody needs to be going in the same direction, because there are benefits to going out there and playing. Honestly, you know, you can protest, you can do the nail, you can get on the mic every day and say that. And that's powerful. Honestly, I think not playing would be the most powerful thing. But whatever they do, do it together. Don't be divided. As long as you move as united front, you're going to get the kind of change you want.
I would like to call upon some San Jose State alumni from the South Bay, one Mr. John Carlos and Tommy English. Mm. Tommy Smith. My bad.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Smith and John Carlos. Go play or not. Go do your thing out there. Ball. And represent. Why can't this foster new movements and be a benefit to the movement that's already going in terms of having it have to be that way? Can't you write your own narrative? Isn't that what the NBA is all about? Is about the players taking ownership of their own product?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with this. I think some holes that people have poked in what Kyrie has said is Adam Silver hasn't said no to anything. He hasn't, but Kyrie hasn't come with any, like, not, I don't know if demands is the correct term, but any requests like, hey, we want to do this. The way I see it is, like, we're all right. They're all eyes would be on them. You can turn this thing into basically a PSA for Black Lives Matter. Can you imagine? Like, Nike is probably salivating right now at the commercials they could create every time there's a game. All the ads, Black Lives Matter, everywhere. And you can basically, because we know there's people probably that are going to be hate watching it, whether they're racist or whether they want this to be an escape from reality. Don't give them that opportunity unless the game is literally being played. And then when it is being played, it's still everywhere. There's no home court. Put Black Lives Matter as the emblem in the middle of the court. Put it everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Put it everywhere. You know, so that's, I just don't think I've heard of, I mean, Kyrie was texting his Nets teammates. We can make our own league. I know Kyrie gets a bad rap, and I know I heard Woj kind of got in trouble for calling him a disruptor or something like that. So I think we're all really listening to Kyrie, and the flat earth stuff has all gone out the window. But until you say, hey, we asked for these things and Adam Silver said no, I don't think you should just come out the woodwork now and say, we're not going to play. And you also don't have a plan in place. Let's think about it like this. Shamari, I agree what you're saying is they should all be one, right? But absolutely. You know what type of, we are in the age of social media. You know the type of scrutiny they'll be under if they say that, but then you hop on Instagram and one of the younger players is on a yacht or having a good time. It's like, so y'all didn't want to play, but you out here enjoying a good time. Not to say you can't enjoy your yacht. If I had a yacht, I'd enjoy it too. But the eyes on you are going to be times 1,000.
What do you think about the conversation in terms of LeBron saying, we're going, like, let's go, let's get it going. And then Patrick Beverley, his would-be opponent, being like, if LeBron says we're playing, we're playing.
That's the kind of sway LeBron has. He swayed referees a few years ago and got a certain player kicked out of a game. LeBron holds way more sway. He's a much bigger figure than Kyrie. And that's the only thing. Like I said, I really, truly believe that the most powerful thing they can do is to not play. I just don't think that's quite going to happen. And I also think that if it isn't, then Kyrie Irving, he's just, I'm not going to say he's not a leader, okay? Except for the fact that he's not really.
Yeah. He's not a leader.
And LeBron, people will follow LeBron. If LeBron says this, I'm pretty sure it would happen, right? But Kyrie has a great idea. And this idea has the misfortune of being thought up by Kyrie Irving.
Right. I don't mean to call Kyrie's leadership out in the context of this suggestion of his. I'm all ears to whatever Kyrie has to say, to whatever anybody has to say. We're all learning in this together, right? Especially when it comes to sports going forward. That said, I can look at Kyrie's Wikipedia page and be like, if you're a leader, then what happened in Boston? What happened to your locker room in Boston? What happened to unity in Boston? So I he's not a good leader. You don't have to tiptoe around that. Pages have been written.
They're different types of leaders again. Yeah, right. But what a good leader does is they're going to come with the information at the front. It's not going to be, we might not play and now there's headlines everywhere. Before you speak with whoever you need to speak with and say, why don't we think about what we could do? It just didn't seem fully baked. And now you have Dwight Howard. I think I saw Dwight Howard on CNN. And then when he got asked about Kaepernick, he was like, I don't play football, so I can't speak on it. And people got mad at Dwight because, like, even though you didn't play football, you can speak. So what? Why are you there? It's just kind of getting all over the place. Just have a plan. If Adam Silver says no, okay. But I'm saying, look, we could play in Kente cloth, okay, for jerseys and have Black Lives Matter everywhere and all wear the number 19 for Juneteenth. I mean, you have so much leverage right now. See what you can do.
Plus, Adam Silver ain't Roger Goodell or Manfred.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He's the dude you bring the ideas for cultural movement too, because that's his bag.
Exactly. You see how far you can push it. And if it's not far enough, then you can think about it. But
if it's not far enough, you bring up China and be like, hey, you already dropped the ball on that one, guy.
Now, I will say this. The NBA has coaches like Steve Kerr, like Popovich, that are, you know, their minds in the right place at all times. And like, they also would be, you know, they didn't have the Jerry Joneses of the world, man, the Robert Krafts of the world. And what's Clemson's coach? You heard
Dabo.
About
that? Dabo.
The Clemson, yeah.
Don't get me started on
Dabo. I'm sorry,
Dabo.
Wait, not Clemson, Oklahoma
no,
State.
No, Gundy.
Gundy. Oh, Gundy. Gundy.
The
shirt. Don't get me started on
that. And the forced press conference and all
cringe.
Those kind of things. So like, if you're going to do, if any league should play for the at least the most of the coaches, I kind of feel like the NBA should. But again, I do say that the most powerful stance would be like, we're not playing until we matter.
Sure. But you have to come with a plan of, mm-hmm. hey, we're going to be doing this. Can't say that. And then you got random rookies on yachts and partying. It's a bad
and a bunch of two-way guys have already come out like, hey, like, I'm for the cause as much as you are, but like, I need that 600,000.
Right. Right. But here, the other thing is, we'll close with this. The last thing is, some of this is about how safe they feel being in that Orlando bubble. Safety, I can't speak on, right, because that's your life. If you don't want to, you know, test those waters or chance getting
right
the virus, I'm not speaking on that. I'm only speaking on it from a, you know, Black Lives Matter movement standpoint.
I guess from the safety point of view, it's like, that's the NBA's obligation to pacify their players, that they're going to keep them safe with whatever rules they implement, right?
Mm-hmm.
If when I worked at the restaurant that I worked at, when this thing broke out, they didn't do that. And so they were like, yo, where are you at for your shift? I was like, I'm at home where it's safe.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know if, I don't think the NBA is going to do it like the unnamed restaurant that I worked at prior to this. I think the NBA is much better at stuff like that,
mm-hmm,
because they've done it before. They showed me that they are.
Right. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, look, guys, that was another great episode. Love chatting it up as usual. Why don't
always
we give our socials? Shamari, you go, then Adam, and I'll close it out.
All right, I'm Shamari Block. It's at The Block Is Hot 3 on Twitter. If you think Barry Bonds doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, hit me up. Let's argue.
I'm Adam from Genesis on Instagram. Comedy's actually starting to get going, man. There's mics in Sacramento. There's mics down in the Valley. So I'm about to be posting some clips from me talking about stuff that isn't sports. I'm much less confident in comedy.
Well, that's what's up, man. We'll be on the lookout for that. And as always, I am Alan Styles, Instagram, Twitter, @_StylesFiles, Styles with an I. Everyone enjoy the weather. I know it's breaking in certain places. It's nice and warm. As much as you can, the outdoor seating, keep your space, keep your distance 6 feet. And until next time, be safe, be well, be wise. Peace.
Yeet.
This was a production of the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network.